I think I'll vote for us to sing that one again, don't you? By about the fourth time, I might get the bass down if somebody will taste me. Do you remember the story of Camelot? Camelot was a place of honor and integrity and truth and justice. And the main characters are King Arthur, Queen Guinevere, and the knight, Sir Lancelot. And early in the story, Arthur explained to Guinevere and Lancelot, he said, "If I don't stand for law, I won't have law among my people. You see, Lance, I have to be absolutely just. Far from being willing to execute his enemies, a real king must be willing to execute his friends." But the problem came when Lancelot and the queen had fallen in love, and the law of Camelot demanded the death penalty for infidelity. And Arthur's illegitimate son and his rival, Mordred, exposes the affair and forces Arthur to confront the dilemma of bringing justice to bear on the two that he loves the most in this whole world. And Mordred taunts the king with the words, "Arthur, what a magnificent dilemma. Let her die, and your life is over. Let her live, and your life's a fraud. Which will it be, Arthur? Do you kill the queen or kill the law?" You ever found yourself on the horns of a dilemma? I mean, when two things that you believe seem to be in diametrical conflict with one another, they seem to contradict one another. Like when you were a child and your mother, when she was giving you a whipping, said, "I'm doing this because I love you." That's a little hard for a kid to make sense out of, isn't it? I mean, how can both of those things be true? In order to grow our faith, we must believe with our head as well as our heart. And I've come to believe that for some, it's easier to believe with our head first and then with our heart. And for others, maybe it's easier to believe, maybe we lead with our heart rather than our head. But for true conversion to take place, both of those things must be converted. And along the way, as we strive to convert our head and our heart, we encounter obstacles. We encounter dilemmas, seeming contradictions that we have to reconcile somehow before our faith journey can continue. Let me share with you a struggle that I had for a number of years in my own personal journey. I believed that God is love. But I kept reading about God killing all these people in the Old Testament. And God was the one who claimed to do it. God said, "I did this." And he killed thousands of people, including women and children, in such events as the flood, the children of Israel as they wandered in the desert, the people of Canaan whenever the land was conquered, the destruction of Jerusalem, and we could just go on and on and on. And God either himself killed those people or he commanded those people to be killed. And I had tremendous difficulty reconciling those two things. How could God be a God of love and kill all of these people? And not to oversimplify it, maybe that's a question that probably bears much more than a very simple answer, but one day I was reading a little book entitled The Studies of Romans by R.C. Bell, and I ran across a statement that helped me understand. And he said, "God's wrath is God's love smitten with a dreadful sorrow. God's wrath is his love in agony." And that's become a key for me in my understanding of how God deals with us as human beings. God never does anything apart from his love. Even his wrath is his love in agony. And my point in all this is this: that there are times and there are things in life that are expressions of love that we may not recognize as love. And someday when we're talking about parenting, we'll pursue that thought a little bit deeper. But right now, just suffice it to say that there are things sometimes that God does. It is an expression of His love, but we don't understand it in that light. It's particularly true of agape love, that unnatural love, that God love. This love that can be commanded, this love that can be taught and learned. In fact, it can only be learned and understood with the Lord as our teacher. Nobody else can teach it because nobody else truly has it. And so if we're going to learn to love as Jesus loved, then He's going to have to be our teacher. We can't arrive at an understanding of such a love any other way. And so we're going to class on Sunday evenings, and we're listening to the Lord tell us how to love. Normally, whenever we talk about love, our Bibles just automatically flop open to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 4 through 8, doesn't it? Love is this, and love is this, and love does not do this, and so forth. And there's no place in all of the world like that scripture to tell us what the characteristics of love are. But we're looking at a different passage. We're looking at Romans chapter 12, and I would invite you to turn there. Romans chapter 12, verse 9 through 21 in a series of lessons that we've entitled Learning to Love, Like Jesus Loves. And what we're seeing in Romans chapter 12, verse 9 through 21 is how love looks in practice. Not necessarily the characteristics of it. That's in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. But this is how love looks in practicality, in everyday life. The fundamental principle here is in verse 9. And it says, love must be sincere. That's the foundation. And that word means without hypocrisy. And the rest of this is this non-hypocritical love. You see, lots of love is hypocritical. It's self-serving. But this love is not. This love always gives in every circumstance, every situation. And we've learned already that this sincere, this unhypocritical love hates evil. It shudders at evil. It cleaves to what is good, glues itself to what is good. And then last week we looked at the third characteristic, this kind of love loves our spiritual family like our physical family. We have feelings of tenderness and love and compassion for one another. And the next way that this Christian love demonstrates itself is by being zealous in all that we do. Romans chapter 12, verse 11. And it literally translates, in diligence, not lazy. In spirit, fervent. Serving the Lord. And so our next characteristic is we're learning how to love like Christ loves. Love is not lazy in accomplishing something. It is diligent. How many of you know what WD-40 stands for? Do you know what WD-40 stands for? I'm serious. I'm this serious. And you know, I'm the kind of person that I read it three or four times and I always forget. Somebody asked me and I think, you know, I read that somewhere. But WD-40 literally stands for Water Displacement 40th Attempt. And there's a story behind it. It's straight out of the lab book of the chemist who developed WD-40 back in 1953. And the chemist was Norm Larson, and he was attempting to put together some kind of a formula that would prevent corrosion, a task which is done by displacing water. And Norm's persistence paid off when he perfected the formula on his 40th try. And so we have WD-40, persistence. This means this love is not lazy in working to accomplish something. It's diligent. This means that we're not to be lazy or listless in whatever we undertake. I can remember as a young boy growing up that when my dad would come to wake me up in the early mornings, particularly in the summertime, early summertime when we were raising cotton, And he'd come on Saturday morning, particularly. That was gave me heartburn, particularly when it was Saturday morning. And he would come before daylight and wake me up and tell me I need to spray the cotton. And you could tell it in my face. You could tell it in the speed with which I moved. You could tell it in my body language that I didn't love it. But I don't have to tell you that there was a difference in the wintertime when he would come and wake me up about 4 o'clock to go duck hunting. It was a different story. I mean, in fact, he usually didn't have to wake me up. Usually I was already up. I cooked breakfast for my dad so that, you know, we could get out there and get with this duck hunting as quickly as we could. I hit the floor running. I had laid out my clothes in line. We didn't have central air or heat in our house, and so in the wintertime it was cold, and we had a fireplace, and I would jump out of the bed and reach and have my clothes so that I could just scoop them all up on the run, you know, and have them all in place. And so I'd scoop my clothes up and run to the fireplace and get the fire going again, and I'd run in and cook breakfast, and I had already loaded up the truck with the motor and the guns and the decoys and the blind material and the shells, and my dad didn't have to worry about anything. He didn't have to worry about having something to eat out in the blind because I'd taken care of that. He didn't have to worry about running out of gas. He didn't have to worry about anything. You know why? Because I absolutely loved it. And you could tell. And there was a lot of difference in the mornings he came to wake me up to get on the tractor than there was to go hunting or go fishing. It's not hard to tell if you love something. It's not hard to tell if you love someone. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might. Sounds like a New Testament passage, doesn't it? But this one adds something on the end. It says, for in the grave where you're going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. And so, whatever you're going to do, you better do it today. And so the first characteristic, or the next characteristic of this non-hypocritical, sincere love is indulgence. Don't be lazy. And then the next one is, in contrast, not lazy, but boiling in spirit, literally. Boiling in spirit. Diligence pertains mainly to your actions. But being fervent in spirit pertains to your attitude. And the root word here for diligent or fervent is, in the English, Z-E-O. And we get the word zeal from it. And it means to boil over. You've seen, is there a difference in a pot where you just have water in it and that when that water's boiling? Lots of difference, isn't it? And that is the picture that the Lord draws for us about how He wants us, our attitude to be. In spirit, we're zealous. You know how God feels about somebody that has no enthusiasm about serving Him? You do know. He says in the book of Revelation, I would that you were either hot or cold, but because you're neither one, what? I'm going to spit you out. Spew you out of my mouth. God doesn't like somebody who is just halfway in between. I'd rather you be cold, He said. I want you to be hot, but I don't like lukewarm. I don't like somebody who's just half-hearted. Luke testifies about the great Christian orator Apollos from Egypt. He said he was a learned man with a thorough knowledge of the Scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and being fervent in spirit, he was boiling over, wasn't he? He taught about Jesus accurately, Acts chapter 18, verse 24 and 25. I once heard a story about a little girl who, for months before her birthday, went around telling everybody all day long, I'm going to have a birthday party. And she just kept on every day before her birthday. And finally, when the day was finally there and the great event was over, then the next day she started telling everybody, I had a birthday party. I had a birthday party. And she went on for days. And her parents decided this wasn't going to ever end. And so her mother forbade her to talk about that birthday party anymore. And so for a full day, she didn't say a word about that birthday party. And then her mother said when she put her to bed that night, she was saying her prayers. And she said, "Dear God, I had a birthday party." One of the oldest blights on Christianity is a lack of enthusiasm, half-heartedness. "Let us not become weary in doing good," Paul will write the Galatian Christians, "for in proper time we'll reap harvest if we do not give up." Fervency requires resolve. It requires persistence and not just good intentions. Anyone and everyone can talk a good game, can't they? You know people that way. They're constantly talking the good game. I don't know about you, but I get tired of people who go around constantly talking about what they want to do and what they're going to do, and they never do any of it. There's a difference between talking enthusiastically and doing enthusiastically. There's a world of difference. I had a preacher friend, and I guess I should say have, who's constantly coming to me with these great ideas about things that he's going to do. And he has the ability to fire people up about his ideas for a few times. But after a while, people learn that he's really not going to follow through with the words. And he's always coming up with these great plans and these great things that he's going to do. And so it gets to the point that he can't fire anybody up. Nobody seems to share his enthusiasm. And so he moved time after time after time. And incidentally, he's still moving today. And I have no idea how many times he's moved, but lots and lots and lots of times. And he doesn't understand. We've talked about it. He just doesn't understand. He got it all down in the words. But he doesn't like the Monday morning stuff. He doesn't like the stuff that comes that requires to do something. This is a love that we have to learn. It requires us disciplining our natural tendencies. There are some of us that are not naturally enthusiastic. But he says, "I want you to be boiling over in spirit when you talk about me and about working for me." In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 8, it says, "Love never fails." It doesn't quit. And that's the way it is with parent and child love, isn't it? You don't give up on your child. You just keep hoping against hope sometimes that everything's going to be all right. They're going to come home. They're going to quit doing whatever it is that they're doing. You just don't give up on them. Being zealous in all that we do. Zeal forces you to do something, to go beyond just getting by, just putting your time in, just getting through the week. William Ward wrote the following: "I will do more than belong, I will participate. I will do more than care, I will help. I will do more than believe, I will practice. I will do more than be fair, I will be kind. I will do more than dream, I will work. I will do more than teach, I will inspire. I will do more than earn, I will enrich. I will do more than give, I will serve. I will do more than live, I will grow. I will do more than suffer, I will triumph." Being zealous in all that we do. Fervency in spirit has to do with perspective and priority. "For this purpose also I labor," Paul testifies in Colossians chapter 1, "striving according to his power which mightily works within me." Now, if it's God's power that's truly working in us, and God's Holy Spirit that's living in us, and he says, "Don't quench the Spirit," then our question is, are you letting God work in and through you? And there's one way to know. God never did anything half-heartedly. Never. Not one time. And love doesn't. Not this God love. It doesn't do anything half-heartedly. It never does. And as you consider your service and your faith and your commitment, are you boiling over in all that you do? Are you just talking? Or are you, in fact, going beyond talking? And are you serving with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength? Are you being fervent? This God love, this love that Jesus has, it pushes us. It pushes us out of our comfort zone. It forces us to do things that we don't sometimes even feel like doing. And it feels unnatural because it is unnatural. But that's this God love that we're learning about. I didn't know what love was until I saw my Lord. And I'm still learning. And hopefully we're learning together. He lived and died for me. Gave himself up, not just in death, but in life for me. Can I do any less for him? Let's stand and sing.